Johann Gutenberg's eyes skimmed the pages of his wealthy father's Latin Bible, which had been laboriously copied by hand. Here and there the ink was smudged and unclear, and in some places he could hardly make out the letters of the words. This hand-copied Bible was the work of a patient and dedicated scribe, crouched over his writing table for many weary months. Because copying an entire book was time-consuming work, Bibles were highly treasured and costly in the 1400s. Gutenberg picked up another book and paged idly through it. In this one, the letters were much more uniform and clear. It showed the work of block printing, a new invention that had recently taken wing. Rather than copying every letter by hand, inventors had learned how to carve whole sheets of words from wood and to stamp entire pages at a time from the raised letters. It took a long time to carve enough pages for a whole book, however, and it was still a very expensive way to print. Only those who were well-to-do could afford to buy books of any kind. The early 1400s were a time of growing spiritual hunger for Europe. Many people longed to own a copy of the Bible and read for themselves how God wanted them to live. But it took so long to hand copy or block print books, and they cost so much money that not many people could buy one. How sad that so many could not have their own Bible. Surely, a simpler, more economical way to print could be found. In Gutenberg's mind, a plan began to form. It should not be that only the rich can afford to buy and read the Bible, he said to himself, running his finger across the printed pages before him. It would only be fair for the common people to have a chance to read God's word as well. Father, show me what I can do to help with the printing of thy word, he prayed. Gutenberg began to experiment. Now living in Strasbourg, Germany, he discovered an old ruined building where monks had once lived. One room in the house needed only a little repair to make it into an ideal workshop. Gutenberg received permission to restore the room and use it as his laboratory. I will keep my plans a secret for myself and God alone, he decided. Gutenberg was a patient man, but he had tackled a very difficult challenge. What made me think this was ever a good idea? He sighed one day, putting his hands behind his head and leaning back in despair. He had tirelessly tested one experiment after another. Time and again he had decided on a new and better plan, and time and again he had failed. His friends and neighbours were beginning to become suspicious of him. They wondered why he spent long hours away from home from early morning till late night, and why he never spoke of what he was doing. Still, Gutenberg persisted, experimenting with artist paints until he had developed a new ink thick enough to stick to the type, but thin enough to transfer cleanly to the page without blotting. The ingenious design of the press was modified from wine presses, and then adjusted to spread even pressure on paper. Finally, all the money Gutenberg had available was gone. Discouraged, weary, and feeling alone, he packed his few earthly possessions and started back to his old hometown in Mainz. But alas, he lamented, my money is gone, and so is any possibility of reaching my goal of printing in a more efficient fashion. Gutenberg stumbled despondently to the side of the road and slumped against a wayside tree. A wealthy goldsmith and lawyer from Mainz appeared by and began to chat. Ha! A noble goal thou hadst! Johann Fust listened with growing interest as Gutenberg told his story of effort and failure. And what are thy plans from this point forth? Gutenberg shook his head sadly. I have no plan. There is nothing more to do but to give up the experiment I had started and had worked so hard trying to complete. Fust combed his fingers through his hair thoughtfully. Thy plan is a good one, he said, and should not be left to wither by the wayside. I am a rich man. I have money to spare. Thy plan shall continue. He smiled at the other man. Here, accept of me a money loan for your project, Herr Gutenberg. Gutenberg began carving individual block letters. Although much more efficient than entire pages of words, the wooden letters still were not distinct enough to satisfy him. Gutenberg decided to try molding block letters from metal instead, and was thrilled to discover that the effect was a huge improvement. He set up the new blocks to be movable, so the letters could be taken apart and rearranged to say anything he wanted them to say. The Latin Bible was finally well on its way to being printed in Gutenberg's shop. This project takes thee far, far too long, Gutenberg. Fust stood at the door of Gutenberg's little shop, critically eyeing the sheets of paper and printing supplies. Gutenberg turned from where he was patiently rearranging the movable type letters for another page. God has prospered the work, he replied, and very soon I hope to return the money that has been so graciously lent to me. Fust shook his head. Thou dost nothing but spend my money without wisdom, he grumbled. It was not the first time he had expressed his impatience with Gutenberg's project. Fust took the matter to court. The judge ruled in Fust's favor. Everything that Gutenberg owned, even the tools he used, now belonged to Fust. Once again, Gutenberg was penniless. But God's work always prevails, and the printing continued under the direction of Fust. When the first Latin Bible was finished between 1450 and 1454, the letters were sharp and clear. The book was printed in two volumes, each with 300 pages. Some were printed on rag, cotton, linen paper, and others were printed on vellum and animal skin. Johannes Gutenberg, you too had persistence in the face of opposition, Tyndall thought. What a gifted, persistent, and inspired man. You've truly fulfilled your vision of releasing the truth imprisoned in a few handwritten books, and you've given wings to the truth and multiplied it like the wind by an untiring machine.